It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As the U.S. Supreme Court establishes a more stringent test to determine whether federal clean water protections apply to a wetland, we explore what this high court ruling means for Wisconsin wetlands and developers seeking permits to dig up or fill protected wetlands. Join in with your thoughts on the ruling, your questions you have. Call in at any point, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Evan Feinauer is a staff attorney at Clean Wisconsin. That's an environmental group working to protect Wisconsin's water, air, and natural heritage. Evan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning. It's great to be here.
Good morning. We'll set this up for us. How does the Supreme Court's ruling change the way that the Environmental Protection Agency regulates wetlands?
Yeah, so this is a ruling about the Clean Water Act. And the Clean Water Act covers what are called navigable waters. And the act further defines that to mean waters of the United States. And these are all these kind of big, vague terms. But what's really important here is that water of the United States in 1977, the act was amended to include adjacent wetlands. So ever since 1977, folks have been going back and forth about, well, which wetlands are adjacent, right? Because if a wetland is adjacent, it's protected by the Clean Water Act. And if it isn't, well, then it may not be. So this has persisted, this question has persisted across 8 presidential administrations. There's been a number of court rulings. And most recently, you know, the Obama administration, the Trump administration, and now the Biden administration, we're all promulgating administrative rules to try to define, well, which wetlands exactly are we talking about? What the court did last week was issue a ruling that broke with the understanding of which wetlands are protected across all of those 8 administrations, across 50 years, across all this case law. And they radically narrowed it to mean that the adjacent wetlands are protected are the ones that are have a continuous surface water connection with waters of the United States. So this is a big deal for wetlands because it, by some estimates, could cut almost in half the acreage of wetlands that are protected by the Clean Water Act. So that's what the court did last week. That's the sort of the big picture in terms of the impact to wetlands on the sort of national scale. Now, there's a lot of details there in terms of why the court ruled this way and how it interplays with Wisconsin that are worth getting into as well.
Just the timing here, though, this decision, Sackett versus EPA, it comes just 2 months after the Biden administration has this new definition of waters of the U.S. rule that becomes effective under the Clean Water Act. So what could that mean for regulators?
Yeah, so this is going to be tricky for them. They're going to have to go back and make sure that they've got a rule that complies with this most recent ruling, right? Because any administrative rule that the Federal Environmental Protection Agency puts out has to be consistent with the Supreme Court's interpretation of the Clean Water Act. So the courts or the EPA is still going to have some flexibility to understand what this phrase continuous surface water connection means. And hopefully they'll do so in a way that protects as many wetlands as possible. But one of the challenges with this court's ruling is, you know, one of the main reasons they ruled the way they did is they said that the prior test, which was known as the significant nexus test from a 2006 decision. And in that, under that that approach, EPA had to determine whether or not wetlands had a quote unquote significant nexus to waters this United States. And Sam Alito, in his lead opinion for the court, said that was too vague and too confusing. Well, continuous surface water connection is pretty vague, too, and there's going to be a lot of work to figure out what that means. So what the EPA under the Biden administration is going to have to do now is do the hard work of figuring out, okay, well, which wetlands have a continuous surface water connection? And just to flesh out why that's a challenge, a lot of wetlands are seasonal. You know, during a wetter part of the year, they might have a continuous surface water connection, and in drier parts of the year, the water connection is below the surface, you know, through a berm or a mound or something. So they're still hydrologically connected and very much ecologically intertwined all year round. But because they don't have a literal surface water connection that persists year round, maybe they aren't protected, maybe they are. So this decision, for all its language about resolving the matter, really just raises a host of new questions as well.
Can you connect this to Wisconsin? How much of our state's wetlands could be affected by this ruling?
Yeah, so Wisconsin is interesting, and there's a few things to emphasize here. Wisconsin has a state wetland law that actually was enacted in sort of in its modern form about two decades ago after a 2001 Supreme Court decision known as Swank that also radically diminished federal jurisdiction over wetlands at that time. And what happened there was on a bipartisan basis, the state legislature stepped up and they improved and strengthened and expanded state wetland law to make sure that if the feds weren't going to be there to protect state wetlands, at least DNR could be. And so we still have most of that law. It's been whittled away and chipped at over the years, but people should be, rest assured that the state DNR still needs to give somebody a permit to fill in most wetlands in Wisconsin. Now, this ruling from the court still negatively impacts Wisconsin waters for a number of reasons, though. First is that in situations where a wetland was protected by state law and federal law, there was overlapping jurisdiction. And then DNR could get the benefit of Army Corps of Engineers and EPA expertise and assistance. This could be a particularly big deal for projects with large wetland impacts. So there's a proposed reroute of a gas pipeline in northern Wisconsin that's been proposed. That's going to impact tons of acres of wetlands. Well, having some federal expertise and resources to help with that can really ease the burden on DNR to map and understand those wetlands. That could go away if a lot of those wetlands aren't jurisdictional.
Thank you. I just want to pause there with that example. Thank you for that. Evan Feinauer, staff attorney at the environmental group Clean Wisconsin, looking at implications of the recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling restricting the EPA's ability to regulate development in wetlands, and fielding your questions about the future of Wisconsin's water and your thoughts. The number to call in to ask a question, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A U.S. Supreme Court's ruling places new limits on the Clean Water Act. We unpack what it means for the preservation of Wisconsin wetlands and those that are adjacent to our state's waterways. Staff attorney at the environmental group Clean Wisconsin, Evan Feinauer, is our guide to the effects of the High Court's ruling and is taking your questions along the way. Call in with questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Evan, you give the example of how this ruling could affect our state's wetlands, one being the disruption of wetlands with the proposed reroute of Line 5, the Enbridge Pipeline project. So how are wetlands typically destroyed in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so people can request a permit from the Department of Natural Resources to fill a wetland for any number of reasons. And the reason does matter because there are different exemptions for certain kinds of activities, agricultural, commercial, what have you. But by and large, what you see is people requesting a wetland for some kind of development on land. And what the department's going to require them to do is to avoid impacts to wetlands where they can, minimize those impacts, and then mitigate for them by helping rehabilitate or restore a wetland someplace else. One of those permit exemptions that I referenced, though, is for non-federal wetlands. And I bring that up because, unfortunately, that exemption is going to expand automatically with the court's ruling last week. So one of the unintended consequences, so to speak, of having an exemption under state law that's tied to the federal definition of a wetland is that even though we have our own wetland protections, that carve out from those protections, which is one that we didn't and most environmentalists did not support, is now bigger than it was when the state legislature enacted it. So unfortunately, we can expect to see the non-federal wetland permit exemption be expanded and certain wetlands not be protected under either federal or state law. So that's another potential impact of this ruling. And that kind of gets into another part of this, which is just, we have all these state wetlands which are protected by permits, and that's great. And if the department has the resources to do its job, great, that'll protect a lot of Wisconsin wetlands. But that still won't be enough to protect Wisconsin's waters, because water doesn't understand or recognize or care about state boundaries. So, we had flooding over in the Mississippi River earlier this year. Well, one of the main things that wetlands can help with is reduce the incidence and severity of flood events. So if Minnesota, for example, isn't doing what it needs to do to protect its wetlands on its side of the border, the water isn't going to go blame Minnesota and flow over there. So this issue of flooding, of water quality, of habitat for species, those are all issues that go across state boundaries. And so that's why having strong federal standards is really important, even if some states have good laws. So to
put a finer point on that, could there be more problems in wetlands near state borders if other states have weaker protections than Wisconsin?
Well, definitely. And if you think about some of our water resources, they're not just along borders on land where you might think of wetlands, but we have the Great Lakes system. Mm-hmm. And wetlands that are around the Great Lakes, particularly in northern Wisconsin, are critical, but they're just across the border from critical wetlands in Minnesota or in the UP in Michigan. So we're now a little bit subject to the whims of other states in terms of how well they're going to protect their wetlands. And that's going to impact our water resources. And that's unfortunate because it shouldn't be the case that if one state is doing a lot to protect its wetlands, which Wisconsin generally is, then we still suffer the consequences. And the other thing, too, is, you know, since this Wisconsin's wetland law was put in place a while back, all that's happened is every legislative session, there are efforts to weaken it.
And I want to pause on that note because there are some further questions on that. Evan Feinauer with us, staff attorney for Clean Wisconsin, as we talk about the future of Wisconsin wetlands after this new U.S. Supreme Court ruling on the Clean Water Act. Let's bring in Jeff in Spider Lake. Jeff, hi, go ahead.
A question. So when, you know, they had the isolated wetlands Supreme Court decision, and in a bipartisan way, the legislature in Wisconsin moved very quickly to pass a state law that allowed protections. And then Minnesota, I believe, followed suit. I do appreciate what you're doing. And is that what we're going to do here? Is we're just going to pass a state law to protect wetlands further? We seem at the whim of the federal government all the time. So it's my question. Is that what we should do?
Jeff, thank you. Go ahead, Evan.
Yeah, that's a great question. So what I hope is that this ruling does give people the energy and the focus and the understanding of how important our state efforts are, and that we can't just rely on what's happening in Washington, D.C. to protect our natural resources. So that's a great example. So after that that decision about 20 years ago, we had a big bipartisan state law to protect wetlands. Right now, what we need is both efforts to strengthen the law and also really strong efforts to make sure that we don't weaken state law anymore. Because one of the arguments that people would use to justify weakening state law is, oh, well, there's federal law. Mm. And as we're seeing, that may not be there. And so we both need to protect what we have and, per the question, fight hard to potentially strengthen our wetland laws further. And I think that there should be energy to do that, given that we're seeing a rollback of protections on the federal level.
Let's go to Perry in Oconto. Perry, hi. What is your question?
Yes. How can the average citizen and probably people get together to strengthen these laws like you're talking about, or not weakening them further? Because it seems like you had mentioned, the Republicans are gradually degrading all our environmental laws, and we have this gerrymandering. So what can the citizens do? How can we get together?
So there are a number of things that can be done. Democracy isn't going to be an easy thing just to pull a lever and make happen. But if you can talk to your legislators about that you care about wetlands, that does matter. Because you better believe that they're hearing from developers about how hard it is to get permits and how wetlands are just a nuisance. And now we know that's not true. We know that they're vital ecologically, and they need to hear that from their constituents, too. The other thing is that science and research and education are critical here, because people do not understand how valuable wetlands are for habitat, for endangered and threatened species, plants and animals, flood issues to address flooding, water quality. They act as filters and sponges, and they do all these wonderful things for the environment. And sometimes people think of them in these little dismal swamps, right? And so the education and the science is critical there. And so just understanding that and spreading those ideas and then talking to legislators can be critical. And part of the way you spread those ideas is spreading those ideas with regular folks so that they understand the value of this. It's a little bit hard to talk about wetlands in general sometimes because there's so many different types and in different parts of the states. But a lot of people have seen a beautiful wetland somewhere in the part of the state that they visit and they care about. And the energy and that love needs to be translated into policy outcomes. And, you know, we can't change the composition of the legislature overnight. So we work with what we have. And one of the ways you can do that is by funding research and grants to rehabilitate wetlands, because that doesn't upset developers, because all you're doing is going out and doing work on the land. And so those carrots that can be offered and those budgetary items are great ways to help wetlands without necessarily irking folks who want to develop land out there.
Evan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Evan Feinauer, staff attorney for Clean Wisconsin, an environmental group that works to protect Wisconsin's water, air, and natural heritage. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.